Listening to a podcast from resistradio.com for Saturday the 2nd of June. My name's Britt D and I'm safely ensconced in my house. I'm actually not even going to leave the house today because I know I'll see something annoying, because of course there are lots of people celebrating the Queen's Jubilee, Diamond Jubilee. 60 years of the reign of Queen Elizabeth II, and the peasants are going to be out in force, basically celebrating their own slavery. You know, isn't it insane? Isn't it insane that people almost worship this woman who hasn't done anything for them and isn't connected to them in any way whatsoever? It really is a celebration of our own oppression and our own servitude. And I look out the window and I can see a Union flag fluttering from somebody's house, because of course people think it's patriotic to support the monarchy, to support the Queen. But how is it patriotic in any way to do that? I mean, this royal family, you know, they aren't even British, they're of Germanic descent. So all of these people proudly waving the Union flag, you know, maybe they should be waving a German flag instead. I mean, the whole idea of patriotism is kind of an alien concept to me. I mean, I can understand why people are proud of their culture and their heritage. I mean, I'm not so much a nationalist as I would say a partial regionalist. I mean, I do relate to people wanting to keep their culture and, you know, being proud of the natural landscape where they live. Maybe, for example, I'm from Yorkshire, West Yorkshire in particular, and yeah, there are certain traditions and landscapes and places, and the character of the people is something that, you know, I like very much. And yeah, in that way I can understand why people are patriotic. But why supporting the monarchy comes into that, I've no idea really. But I mean, there's only so much you can say really, and I am kind of burnt out on the whole thing really. You know, I went down to London last year, as I've talked about before, giving out flyers to people, and yeah, I mean, hardly anyone was interested really. Everyone was out having a nice day, the sun was out, people had time off work that they wouldn't have got, and it's not as sunny today, it's pretty overcast actually, so I'm sure that's going to spoil a few street parties. But yeah, people are going to be out, they're going to be celebrating, they've been given a couple of days extra off work, which is enough to emotionally kind of manipulate people into being thankful for this time off that they've got, you know, these hard-working peasants. So there's part of me that just thinks, yeah, just let people get on with it. You know, if people are going to be that stupid, then just leave them to it. And I mean, they deserve their own servitude is something that I tend to think sometimes, you know. It was Aldous Huxley who said that the people will come to love their own oppression. And of course, he was talking about in terms of technology and things that make life easier. But we don't even need those technologies. People do love their own oppression, and the British people, a lot of them, do have this forelock tugging, you know, sort of slavish mentality. And if anything's ever going to change, then we need to fundamentally change this characteristic. You know, not just the characteristic of the British, characteristic of many other countries as well. But yes, anyway, what else is going on in the news? Well, of course, it's Bilderberg going on at the moment. And, I mean, at the risk of sounding like some kind of conspiracy traitor, I have to say I've not really done any kind of research into Bilderberg this year at all. I've not really read many of the stories at all. You know, I've been researching this kind of stuff and involved in this stuff for quite a few years now, so yeah, I've experienced quite a number of Bilderbergs now, and I guess with like the monarchy stuff, I'm kind of burnt out on Bilderberg as well. I mean, you know, it has become almost a sort of ritual in the conspiracy culture, hasn't it? You know that every year Alex Jones is going to be out bullhorning at some building far off in the distance. You know that the usual sort of conspiracy figureheads, like, you know, Luke Radowski or people like that, Mark Dice, you know they're all going to be out. And yeah, it's just like, I mean, what can you do, really? I mean, I guess it is good that people are out and actually taking some kind of physical action. I mean, I do support that, even though at resistradio.com we have talked a lot about whether protest, street protest, is really worthwhile, whether it really ever achieves anything. And I mean, that's kind of an attitude that I do have some sympathy for, having been involved in the protest against the Iraq war in the build up to that a number of years ago. And you know, absolutely nothing came from those protests. There were like more than 1 million people on the streets of London, and nothing happened at all. I mean, it was, you know, totally peaceful. And yeah, what does peaceful protest really achieve? That doesn't mean I'm endorsing any kind of violence, but you do have to ask these questions. And we have to say that peaceful protest hasn't achieved a great deal, has it? Because it's so easy just to ignore. And, you know, the protests against Bilderberg, not only are they peaceful, there's also a danger that some of these characters who are involved in bullhorning buildings and things like that, I mean, there's the danger that in the mind of the public, that it's going to be seen as a kind of a lunatic fringe to do thing to do, isn't it? I mean, this is a big danger of this whole conspiracy scene. I'm not particularly wanting to have a dig at Alex Jones again. I mean, I've done that plenty of times in the past, but yeah, I don't know, I just get a bit tired really of this annual ritual. The answer to 1984 is 1776. You know, it's like, here we go again, another year, another big fat Texan shouting through a bullhorn surrounded by people in InfoWars t-shirts. So yeah, I've no idea what's going on at Bilderberg, to be honest. I mean, we've also got people like Charlie Skelton, who's a writer for The Guardian. This is also part of the ritual now. He's ensconced himself within the sort of people who protest Bilderberg. I mean, very much ripping off what John Ronson did quite a number of years ago. Of course, John Ronson accompanied Jim Tucker to one of the older Bilderbergs, I think like back in 1999 or something. And this guy, Charlie Skelton, basically nicked his idea about 10 years later and went along to a Bilderberg, I think, to write just a sort of a humorous piece about these, you know, crazy conspiracy theorists. And he basically sort of got suckered into the whole thing, started asking questions for himself. But of course, the pieces that he writes for The Guardian, I mean, whilst they are more critical than they used to be, you know, they're still being written for humorous purposes. You know, he's a comedy writer, so he's very much using the whole thing to advance his own personal agenda, which is an issue that keeps recurring, this idea of people using events to advance their own agenda. Of course, particularly in reference to what's happening with Breivik at the moment, kind of jumping from topic to topic here, but it's all kind of connected, because I went on Red Ice Radio the other day with Tom Secker, talking to Henrik, who runs Red Ice Radio. That's going to be online, I think, in about 5 days or maybe a week. And yes, one of the things that we talked about during that 2-hour conversation was the fact that, yeah, people jump on any kind of event to advance their own personal agenda. With regards to Breivik, we were talking about how the left were using the terror attack in Norway to demonise the right and to kind of put down anybody who does support nationalism and, you know, try and paint them all as extremists. And on the other hand, the other side of the paradigm, political paradigm, the right, were using it to using it to advance their own agendas as well, to say that, look, we have a real problem here with immigration, people aren't happy, and if the governments don't do something about it, we could well start seeing more and more attacks like Breivik carried out. You know, that's very much what Tommy Robinson, the leader of the EDL, was saying. He was trying to blackmail people basically by saying, if this Islamic immigration isn't sorted out, there will be another terror attack. And we see the media exploiting the situation to sell newspapers. Usually they do that by picking on the most sensational aspects of the trial, which are often the most ridiculous aspects. For example, last week we saw these news stories about how Breivik apparently referred to David Beckham and him being a metrosexual. And yeah, this was like a headline in the Sun, Breivik admired Beckham or something like this. And it's like, you know, there are so many big issues here, why are they focusing on this? And it's because, yeah, they just want to sell papers, obviously, you know. It was Rahm Emanuel who said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And yeah, we can see that wherever we look, whenever there's a crisis, somebody is trying to use it to push their own agenda. And whenever there's a big event like Bilderberg, again, people trying to push their own agenda, whether that's Alex Jones with his bullhorn, whether that's Charlie Skelton writing his humorous newspaper pieces, whether that's old Jim Tucker, who, you know, is out again, hanging around the buildings or whatever. You know, you've got to admire the sort of tenacity of Jim Tucker, but I don't know, if I sort of got to his age, I'm not really sure I'd be too kind of satisfied with how I'd spent my life, really, because it's like, you know, what's ever really come out of these protests against Bilderberg? I guess Jones would argue that they've got bigger year on year, and that, I don't know, that's going to reach some kind of tipping point, is it? But I mean, is it really? You know, this is the whole question about, like, Alex Jones and InfoWars. I mean, what's the ultimate goal here? Yes, anyway, interesting stuff, but unfortunately I've not been following Bilderberg, so you'll have to fill me in on what's going on there. I think it's in Virginia in the US, isn't it? So I've actually no idea who's attending, but let's move on to some other stories anyway. And confirmation of the obvious, which is that the US, of course, has been cyber attacking Iran, and that they, along with Israel, were behind the Stuxnet virus. US was key player in cyber attacks on Iran's nuclear program, and Obama himself apparently sped up pace of computer sabotage in 2010, even after the Stuxnet leak, according to New York Times report. So there's a very big attempt at the moment to make Obama out to be this guy who's tough on Iran, and that he was personally responsible for the cyber attacks against Iranian centrifuge machines. And also there's talk about his personal role in approving terrorist targets for US drone strikes. I mean, isn't it terrible that the things that are being used to try and make him appear a good, strong leader are things like murder, which basically is what the drone strikes are, you know. These people are being killed without any kind of due process and without any kind of evidence presented that the people who are being assassinated are actually terrorists or a threat to the West in any way. So yeah, somebody else is using this outright murder to make him seem a good leader. And also, you know, the outright immoral and criminal cyber attacks as well. You know, who could know really what the effects of these attacks on the Iranian nuclear program could be? You know, you attack a centrifuge machine, which is used to enrich uranium, and you make it spin out of control, is the phrase that's used in this Guardian article. And that could be incredibly dangerous. You don't mess around with things like that. It's incredibly dangerous. And, of course, the blatant hypocrisy of the West and Israel in doing things like this. You know, if Iran was found to have carried out cyber attacks, you can bet that that would be used as evidence of their evilness and as evidence of the fact that they need to be militarily attacked. You know, this evil Iranian regime that's trying to supposedly develop the nuclear weapon. You know, how many times have we talked about this? How many times have we exposed this ridiculous myth of Iran trying to develop a nuclear weapon? You know, there's not actually any evidence that they're trying to do that. They're perfectly within their rights to develop uranium for peaceful purposes, for domestic energy purposes, as signatories to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They're perfectly entitled to do that, whereas Israel, of course, has never signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and operates a policy of nuclear ambiguity, which basically means that they don't tell people what nuclear weapons they have. You know, just the sheer hypocrisy here. Again, it's just too much to take in sometimes, really, isn't it? Of course, all the time, the planned military attacks on Iran go ahead. You know, this is what Syria's all about. Syria being a key partner or a key ally of Iran. That's what this whole destabilization of Syria is all about, to try and isolate Iran before the attack on them. You know, you have to say it doesn't seem to be going too well for the plans with Syria, because Bashar al-Assad is holding out. But, you know, the propaganda really is in full force now, isn't it? Last week we saw these horrendous images of these children who'd been brutally murdered in Syria. I think there was, I can't remember the exact number, but there was multiple children had been stabbed to death or had their throats slashed. You know, quite awful footage. But the point was, this was immediately blamed on the Syrian regime. I mean, not just on the Syrian regime, but specifically Assad. And, you know, there was very little evidence presented that it was people working for the Syrian regime that had done that. And there were a number of reports that this had been carried out by people connected to the Syrian rebels. And yeah, I can well believe that it was connected to some kind of militia that are currently fighting the Syrian regime. You know, we know that Al-Qaeda are operating in Syria, particularly people who had been fighting in Iraq against the US forces there, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. They'd moved down to Syria to carry on their war, and these people are, you know, capable of doing something like this. You have to ask, like, how would this possibly benefit the Syrian regime to slaughter a load of kids? This would obviously be used as propaganda against them, as it had been, even though it's unlikely that they actually carried this out. You know, there's no kind of sense of the media actually stopping and saying, like, why would they even do this? It doesn't even make any sense. You know, the Western media talked about Assad's slaughter of the innocents and things like this, and merely repeats what they're told by the official sources. And, you know, the official sources are blatantly going all out now to try and, as I talked about, destabilize Syria and get rid of the Assad regime as a move to heading towards taking out Iran, basically. You know, we're coming up to pretty interesting times, because this oil embargo on Iran is about to kick in. So as well as the terrorism that's being fermented in Syria on the ground with bombings carried out by Al-Qaeda and backed by the Arab countries such as Qatar and Saudi Arabia, and no doubt backed by the Western powers behind them, who are keeping a fairly safe distance, but I've no doubt that they're involved, you know, to a certain extent in what's happening in Syria. And yeah, we're also now going to be seeing economic terrorism against Iran, because that's what these sanctions are, economic terrorism. You know, these sanctions really aren't going to hurt the people in power in Iran at all. The attacks on the economy like this, and the sanctions that we've already seen against the banking institutions in that country, I mean, you know, the ultimate people who are going to be affected by this are the ordinary people, you know, people like me and you living in Iran. And that's what this is all about, putting pressure on the people of Iran. This is what the strategy is, I believe. That's what the strategy of economic sanctions always is. That's what the strategy was back in Iraq, before the last invasion. You know, we had all of these sanctions which led to the deaths of, you know, so many countless thousands of people in that country. So the plan is basically to make conditions amongst the population, you know, so tough that they take out the leaders themselves. And obviously, you know, the West has a guiding hand in that. The West can then install their own puppet regime in the country. But yes, the oil embargo on Iran, which is no doubt going to have a knock-on effect on Europe and the rest of the world. I mean, we're in this recession, which is actually a depression, and which there's really no end in sight to. You know, this economic system is totally out of control now, as we've talked about many times. But yeah, this economic embargo, which is designed to punish Iran and to make conditions worse for the Iranian people, is also going to make conditions worse for us in Europe and the US as well, because, you know, the prices of oil are going to increase. That's why we've had people like Cameron, who met with Obama recently to talk about tapping into reserves of oil to try and lower the price, because the prices are just going to keep rising, and political leaders are trying to cover that up by getting those prices down, even though at the same time they're punishing Iran with these oil embargoes. So they're in a real catch-22 situation, on the one hand trying to punish Iran, but on the other hand really sort of cutting off their own nose to spite the face, because it's Europe and the US who are going to suffer from these higher prices. That, of course, leads me on to another continuing story, you know, the collapse of the European economies. I mean, that's just an ongoing process, isn't it, really? There's more information about Spain and how bad a situation Spain is economically. Of course, we've got Greece, which is, in a terrible state. You know, the people there are really suffering, and suicides are much higher than they were before all this economic crisis. You know, living standards plummeting, access to healthcare is being severely reduced as well, leading to an upsurge in diseases that had even been sort of eradicated in Greece. Like, I think malaria was one of the diseases that's made a comeback in that country because of the lack of healthcare resources. And yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting what's happening in Greece. Obviously, they're going to have elections very soon, and you know, the Western leaders are basically trying to blackmail that country to vote the way that they want them to vote, which is keeping Greece in the euro. We've had various politicians such as Cameron and Merkel basically threatening Greece and saying, this is the way we want you to vote, and if you don't, then you're going to have to leave the euro. As I've said before, you know, I don't really see why that should be interpreted as a threat, because if I was in Greece, I would want to drop the euro and return to the drachma and start again from scratch, basically. You know, this is one question that I've got about the leader of this. The party is called Syriza, and their leader is a guy called Alexis Tsipras. I might be mispronouncing his name there, but this sort of young radical guy, and yeah, a lot of the things that he says I definitely agree with. He wants to kick out the banksters and tell them to go shove their immoral debts, but you know, at the same time, he is in support of the euro. He wants to remain part of the euro, and that's obviously not a particularly radical position to take, is it? If you want your country to remain within the euro, to you know, give national sovereignty away to Brussels, to allow your country to be ruled by unelected bureaucrats, I mean, it's just a lot of the things he says I agree with, but you do have to question why he would want to remain in Europe and as part of Europe. And then on the other hand, we've got the party called the Golden Dawn, very occultish sounding name, and this is the far right party in Greece, who are on the other hand, on the other extreme, you know, totally nationalist. And yeah, I mean, it's just this whole polarization of society, which is another recurring theme that I've been talking about as well in relation to the Breivik case. You know, all across Europe we see the left and the right just being polarized, the two extremes dividing, and you know, within that there's definitely a space for the state and for the intelligence services to move in and to manipulate these organizations. You know, there are a lot of angry people, and this kind of anger can be exploited and can be used, just as happened during Operation Gladio, the strategy of tension, whereby the state was using these kind of more extreme groups to carry out bombings and terror campaigns. That was used to demonize people that they wanted to demonize. In the case of some of the Operation Gladio bombings, that was the left and communist. But this was to generate a sort of more a wider feeling of paranoia and unease amongst the population. And this can be used to advance the agendas of whoever is controlling the whole thing. The shadowy elites, you know. It does sound a very conspiracy theory, but you know, it's impossible to name names. But as I talked about in the Red Ice interview, which I mentioned earlier, you know, there's just this sense that yeah, there's really something being fermented, like some kind of huge, I don't know what, race war or war of religions or something. It sounds very vague and it sounds very apocalyptic, and I don't really mean to spread fear, but you know, it's just a sense that yeah, something is definitely brewing, you know, as we move towards the supposed end of the Mayan calendar or whatever. You know, that's not something that I have any interest in, but it does feel like things are coming to a head. But then I guess I've been saying that for quite a long time, you know. If you monitor the news, then I guess you could argue, you know, things have always changed kind of substantially. Things are always changing, and there hasn't been a time when things haven't seemed kind of apocalyptic. You know, you could say back in the Cold War, of course, you know, like I guess people felt the same there about that, and the fact that at any moment, you know, nuclear bombs could be dropped or whatever. Maybe this is just the human condition, isn't it, to constantly be on the edge of some kind of apocalypse, but then hopefully, you know, never actually realizing it. We'll have to see. Anyway, I'm coming to the end of the half hour tonight. It's been kind of rambling because I didn't really have anything prepared, but I did want to get a podcast up. You know, I really should try and do them more regularly. So I hope you've enjoyed my rambling anyway. Stay tuned to the site, check out my articles, check out the podcasts when I do them. I'll let people know when that Red Ice interview is available. You can sign up to the Facebook page or the Twitter account for updates on that. You can find the links to that on the resistradio.com website. So as always, thanks for listening, have a good weekend, and I really hope that you're not going to be waving around a Union flag and celebrating the Queen. I know you're not. Take it easy, guys. Cheers.